The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today, we're going to be talking about orthopedic health and specifically the specialty of orthopedic surgery. And our guest is Dr. Stephen Moore. He is an orthopedic surgeon at Health Alliance Hospital here in Kingston. So, Dr. Moore, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Moore, can we just start out with some of the basics for our listeners, just to give them a foundational understanding of orthopedic health in general and then the specialty of orthopedic surgery?
Sure. So orthopedic essentially refers to the diagnosis and treatment of problems associated with the musculoskeletal system. So bones, joints, muscles, soft tissues, tendons, ligaments, all the way from ranging from the spine and all the major joints, shoulder, elbow, knee, hip, ankle, foot, and hand. Those are the main, you know, subspecialties within the specialty of orthopedic surgery.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the more common conditions that you find in your practice, and how do you approach those in terms of planning out treatment regimen?
Well, they can kind of be divided into traumatic conditions and degenerative or atraumatic conditions, right? So traumatic conditions would be fractures, dislocations, subluxations and separations, things of that nature, where a joint or a bone is fractured or out of place, or ruptures of tendons where a tendon is detached from a bone or ligament, or instability of joints. And then there's the degenerative conditions such as arthritis, which is treated, you know, in a different way. And so a lot of these things are, traumatic conditions and atraumatic conditions have both non-operative and operative treatments, depending on the location, the severity, what's been treated, if it's been treated before or not, what treatments have worked in the past, and also, again, the severity of the condition. Mm-hmm. So those will dictate treatment.
So when you refer to traumatic, does that mean that the patient has sustained some type of injury, or is it more a function of aging, or both, or how does that?
Well, traumatic conditions would be an injury, whether it's a motor vehicle accident, a fall, mm-hmm. Getting tackled in a football game, falling from a roof or from a ladder, right? So those are the traumatic conditions, or even just falling from a height, slipping in wet grass or slipping on ice. Those would be the traumatic conditions. And the degenerative conditions, like you mentioned, would be, arthritis or just tendonitis and things that occur just by virtue of overuse or aging or things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And do you find a majority anywhere of your patients aggregating into one particular demographic, or is it pretty much across the board depending on what it is?
It's across the board, because we see patients of all ages. We'll see, children from a year or younger all the way to people in their 90s, because, everyone is susceptible to either traumatic or atraumatic conditions. Generally, the younger population is more traumatic conditions, and the older population is more atraumatic or degenerative conditions. But the types of things that you see in each age group tend to vary, right? As we get older, our bones become more fragile. So a simple slip and fall can cause a fracture of a hip, which would not occur in a patient who has normal bone density. In addition, that would not happen in a younger patient, but a younger patient may be more likely to sustain a rupture of a tendon by playing sports. So you tend to see certain things across certain demographics and age groups and also sport and activity levels.
Mm-hmm. And so to what extent do you collaborate with other providers to provide complementary care or a more holistic treatment plan for your patients?
Quite a bit. I mean, I would say probably less than 10% of the people that come to see me in the office actually need surgery. So a lot of these things are treated by, other healthcare providers, specifically a lot of patients are back and forth with physical therapists, chiropractors, massage therapists, and also with other medical specialties that we collaborate with, whether it's internal medicine or infectious disease specialists for infections that we see. There are some specialties we just don't overlap with, obviously, like an ophthalmologist and an orthopedic surgeon generally have very little overlap. But for the most part, we with other medical specialties, a lot of overlap. But specifically, I would say with physical therapists and other adjunctive providers of treatment.
Mm-hmm. And that segues into my next question. And I'm sure this is subjective with each case, but are there common steps that you take or what are the steps that you take to determine whether surgery is necessary for a patient?
Well, for traumatic things such as a fracture, it would depend on how displaced the fracture is, how angulated a fracture is, how severe a fracture. In other words, you know, if there's a degree of fragmentation of the bone or if the bone comes through the skin, those are emergent things. But for more degenerative conditions, usually we always try non-operative things because very often they work. So whether that's just activity modifications, which is a nice way of saying if it hurts, don't do it. Anti-inflammatory medications or analgesics, physical therapy and home exercise programs, stretching, resting from the inciting incident and doing specific exercise, functional exercises to get back to the activity that you'd like to do. And then usually those or injections is another modality we use very frequently, cortisone injections and gel shots and other things. And if those modalities work, that's fine. And if they don't, then sometimes it arrives at the necessity for a surgery.
Mm-hmm. So when you mention exercise, so just generally speaking, because I am up there in age, I won't say exactly where, but I go to the gym regularly. Does that have a preventative effect for some of the more common types of conditions that you see? I mean, being able to strengthening your muscles and staying in general good physical condition?
Yes, I think it does, as long as it's done correctly, right? Because doing too much, too much weight, too many repetitions, or improper form can actually cause problems. But I think always the goal is to stay moving, right? A body wants to be moving. And so joints like to be moved, not sit still. So it's, yes, exercise is very good in prevention. Generally, as we get older, we tend to recommend more low impact exercise instead of high impact exercise. So that means, you know, things like walking and stationary bikes and elliptical machines that are less stressful on the joints. In addition, lower weight, high repetition weightlifting exercises. So you don't want to be like someone, you know, who's older. You don't want to go maximum weight for one repetition. You want to do reps of 15 to 20 repetitions, which are safer and put less stress on the joints and the muscles and the ligaments and the tendons.
Right. Just so really toning and building, you know, just good.
Correct. Good, and so, right. And very often for that reason, we'll refer to a physical therapist just to educate them on how to do things properly, right? Most people can do a lot of these exercises on their own. They may not have access to specific equipment that a physical therapist does, but you don't need a lot of fancy equipment to do a lot of the exercises. Either you can go to a gym where they do it, or you have some things that you can do at home, or even use just body weight exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm one of those people who, not necessarily at the gym, but, you know, who imagines that I still have the endurance and strength of a 20-year-old.
Yeah, the body ages faster than the mind.
So true. So, Dr. Moore, I'm sure that, I mean, surgery in almost every area, whether it's heart surgery or other types of surgery, has advanced tremendously over the years. Can you highlight for our audience some of the key advances in orthopedic surgery and how that's making a difference for your patients and for outcomes?
Sure. So I think there's been a trend towards from more, you know, what we would call maximally invasive to minimally invasive procedures, such as arthroscopic surgery, where surgery is performed through several small holes instead of big incisions. That's not relatively new per se. That's been around for a long time, but always the instruments and the implants and the visualization has gotten much better over time. I think probably the latest advances is more with joint replacement and spine surgery is more computer guided and CT guided and image guided surgery for accuracy. So when you put an implant in for a hip or a knee or a shoulder replacement, the position of the implants is crucial for it to be, number one, successful, and also for the longevity of an implant. You want it to last as long as possible. And so the accuracy that these things are put in is crucial to that. And so now when we do, you know, computer-guided surgery or image-guided surgery, it's made it much more accurate as far as positioning of the implants for better function and longevity of the surgery that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. So if someone has a hip or a knee replaced, what is the expectation? Again, generally speaking, I won't hold you to this, but what is the expectation for the duration of that replacement?
Well, the goal is always to have it last someone for their lifetime. So that's part of the conversation that we have in the office. So the things that can affect that are, number one, how old you are when you have it done, right? So for things that can wait, we try to wait as long as possible to do it, with the rationale that the longer you wait to do it, theoretically, the longer it'll last you. Mm-hmm. Because you want it to last forever. Now, does it always? Of course not. And things need to be revised. And the first one is the best one. So I tell people, you want to treat the first one as good as possible. So I'll tell patients there are certain things that you should not do on a regular basis, depending on what joint it is. But specifically, I do a lot of shoulder replacements. So I tell people you should not lift more than 25 pounds on a regular basis. You should avoid throwing activities and things of that nature, because these implants, they're made of metal and plastic, and they have no ability to heal. Right. So the less stress that you put on them, the less it'll cause them to either loosen or wear out. And those are tend to be the modes of failure of these things. So they either loosen over time or they wear out. The bearing, it's a plastic bearing that can wear out. Mm-hmm. And so if you can treat it as nice as possible and, you know, not put someone in a sling for the rest of their life, but avoid certain activities and also wait as long as possible to do it in the first place, if you can, then theoretically it gives it the best chance to last as long as possible. That being said, I've done these things in people in their 20s, but those are the people that I worry about as far as how long is it going to last.
Right. Yeah. Because they got a ways to go. This is really interesting. You know, I've always been curious about some of these things because I hear about them or I have friends or family members doing, you know, getting these types of replacements. And I'm sure our listeners want to learn a lot more. But first, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on Magic 92.5 WGHQ.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. And today, we're talking with Dr. Stephen Maher, who's an orthopedic surgeon at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston. We're talking about the subject of orthopedic health and the specialty of orthopedic surgery. So, Dr. Maher, before the break, we were talking about the basics of orthopedic health and surgery and some of the advances that have been made. Can you give our listeners just an understanding of what the journey looks like from a patient's perspective, from initial consultation to perhaps surgery and post-surgery follow-up with orthopedic surgery?
Sure. So let's assume just to narrow it down that it's someone who needs a joint replacement. So initially, someone will come to the office not knowing, or maybe they will, but very often not knowing what's wrong. They just know that something hurts. And so the first thing that we do is we take a history of how long has the problem been going on for? Was there an injury? Where does it hurt? What makes it hurt? What makes it feel better? Have you had any treatments before, including therapy or injections or surgery? That's sort of the initial nuts and bolts of what we try to elicit talking to a patient, how it affects their life. What do they do for work? Does it affect sleep? Those are the kind of questions that we ask. And then generally we start with a plain x-ray, which is done right directly in the office. X-rays show certain things, like they will look specifically on an x-ray for alignment of a joint, whether or not there's arthritis of the joint, which is wearing away of the joint. We'll obviously look for fractures. We'll look for deformity. Look for obviously any lesions in the bone, and other degenerative conditions. The things that you'll see specifically in our in an arthritic joint, or you'll see narrowing of the joint. So people have heard the term bone on bone. That means that the cartilage that lines the end of the two bones has worn away. And so when you look at an x-ray, there should be a space between the bones. When that space is either narrowed or absent, that implies that the cartilage has worn away and now the joint is arthritic. And that can happen in any joint, but it can, and it'll cause the bone to form these bone spurs or what we call osteophytes. So those are the things that we look for on an x-ray. And then we do a physical exam, obviously, and because you want to examine whatever the person is there for. So you do what's called palpation. So you touch on certain places to see if they're tender. You look for deformity. You look for atrophy of the muscles. You look for any swelling or bruising. And then you take that joint through a range of motion and you measure the range of motion in multiple planes, depending on whether it's a shoulder or a knee or a hip. And then you do specialized testing, looking for stability and strength and testing. And then based on that, you come up with a diagnosis. And very often other tests are needed, an MRI scan, a CAT scan, which have their own specific reasons for doing. And then from that point, you come up with the decision of what's wrong and then a treatment plan. Now, assuming that they've done non-operative things, physical therapy, injections, medications, and those things haven't worked or haven't worked well enough, and the decision is made to perform a surgery, then you have a consultation specifically regarding that. And you discuss what are the expectations of that, what are the risks and the benefits and the alternatives to that. And then that's the opportunity where patients generally have been to the office a few times and they can ask questions regarding the rehabilitation. Again, how long is recovery going to take? When are they going to be able to drive? How are they going to sleep? Those are all common things, and physical therapy. And then from that point, then most of the time people will need something called medical clearance ahead of surgery. So they'll have to see their primary care physician to make sure that it's safe for them to undergo a procedure. They may need to require a consultation with a cardiologist to ensure that their heart is okay so that they're safe to undergo anesthesia and the procedure. Mm-hmm. Generally, people are admitted that day to the hospital, the day of the surgery. The surgery is then performed and either they go home the same day or spend 1 or 2 days or multiple days in the hospital until they're ready to either go home or they have to go to a skilled nursing facility or outpatient or inpatient rehab until they're ready to go home. Then that's seen in the office usually around a week or 10 days or so after the surgery to look at the wound to make sure that the wound is looking okay, and then continue outpatient physical therapy. And the duration and frequency depends on the specific procedure that is performed.
And is there any one, just generally speaking again, any one joint that is more vulnerable to wear and deterioration than others? Maybe you can
illustrate that. By far, knee replacements are number one performed procedure in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Number two would be hip. Number three would be shoulder. And then very distant third and fourth, it would be, ankle and elbow. Mm-hmm. They're much less commonly performed. But knee is by far number one. Hip would be number two. And shoulder would be number three.
Is it because the knee and the hip really are carrying all of the weight above it?
Correct. That's exactly right. They're weight-bearing joints, right? You weight-bear mm-hmm. through your knee and your hip. And so, susceptibilities to things of that nature include genetics. That's a large component of this. People that never had an injury can wind up with arthritis at a younger age just by virtue of the fact of their genetics. Weight can contribute to that. People that are overweight put more weight, more pressure on their joints can cause them to wear out. Any malalignment, if you have a previous injury to your knee where you tear a ligament or a cartilage in your knee, 30 years down the road or 20 years down the road can turn into arthritis. So you don't develop arthritis acutely, you develop it over time. And so certain types of injuries, specifically like an ACL tear, which is a common sports injury, people that have torn that, say, in their teens and 20s tend to get arthritis at a younger age, say in their 40s and 50s, as opposed to maybe their 60s or 70s, because the mechanics of the joint are off and something changes when you have these certain injuries that lead you more susceptible to developing these conditions.
Mm-hmm. And for the average patient, and that might be an average, but just generally speaking, once again, what is the average period of time to total recuperation, or at least, recuperation to the place where you're not having to worry about it so much and not having to go for, frequent follow-up?
So that's a great question. It depends on a couple of things. Number one, which joint is being replaced. Number two, there's a lot of patient specific factors that go into that. So I would say on average, hip replacements recover the fastest, then knee replacements, and then probably shoulder. So hip replacements within a few weeks feel significantly better most of the time. Knee replacements probably more in the 6 to 8 week range. And shoulder replacements, I generally tell people, don't expect to think this was a good idea for about 3 months. Now, that being said, there are a lot of factors that go into that. People have different perceptions of pain, different thresholds of pain, different coping mechanisms. People, there are certain subsets of patients that have higher risk for more pain or less pain after surgery. So it's hard to, like you said, apply that across the board. But in general, I would say those are kind of the guidelines. In some way, people feel better almost immediately because when you put a smooth articulation in there, they feel better. But surgery itself hurts, right? So it takes time to get over the trauma of having a procedure performed.
And so we know that that patients play an important role in the partnership of staying healthy and then for surgical procedures and corrective procedures. So what part does the patient play in the in trying to ensure a successful outcome and follow up?
I mean, I think it's crucial. I think an educated patient who asks the right questions and knows what's happening, right? Has an expectation of what's going to happen, so it's not new or not so much of an unknown. There's less anxiety. There's also compliance of patients, right? So you have to follow instructions and essentially not do certain things until you're told that it's safe to do so, or also do the things you're told to do, such as range of motion exercises and physical therapy, right? Because again, the surgery is one part of it, but the rehabilitation is another part of it. So, there are certainly factors from patients and family members that contribute to the success or the demise of the procedure. Right. If there are certain complication rates that can be lowered based on certain things, like for instance, patients that are diabetic, there are a threshold to operate on them. If the sugars are too high, then it's not safe, higher risk of infection. People that are smokers have higher risk of complications. So you can never prevent complications. You can only try to lower the risk of complications.
And Dr. Moore, before we run out of time, how do people learn more and get in touch with you or your department?
So directly through the hospital website, there should be a link to the orthopedic department, either through just Westchester Medical Center or through Health Alliance. In addition, my specific practice, which is Orthopedic Associates of Dutchess County, it's OADC. We have a website and links to not only myself, but all of my other partners, because we have subspecialties. We have people that specialize in hand surgery, foot surgery, spine surgery, hip and knee surgery, shoulder surgery, sports medicine. So we have, and everyone subspecializes within their own specialty, which is good, because then, you're getting sort of not the jack of all trades, master of, none, right?
Yeah. Well, Dr. Moore, thank you so much. I mean, this has really been an interesting conversation. I knew very little about the subject, just a layperson's knowledge, but you've really illuminated the subject, and it was really great to talk with you. And thank you for the work that you and your colleagues do.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the show. I had a lot of fun.
It's great. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.